Happy Saturday, everyone. Glad you could join us here on the Bite Me Fishing Show. Hope you remember to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast, but especially Podbean and sportsradio610.com. And don't forget YouTube. Really, really cool on-water stuff you can find there. And I know Dean and I have a couple of unique videos planned for the next week or so. All right, Scott, let's talk tarpon. Maybe you want to give an update on when you're going to actually be out there on your new boat, but you're plugged in. Here we are, mid-July. It should be prime time. What are you hearing?
Tarpon fishermen are really pretty closed-mouthed. you don't just hear a whole lot. You gotta be out there and seeing it. And unfortunately, I haven't been able to be out there much. I've gotten a few little reports here and there. Had one of our listeners contact me and trying to figure out what they were doing wrong. They had hooked up, I think he said three that mm-hmm. they put in the air, and they lost all three of them. Mm. I said, man, that's just tarpon fishing. You know, you typically land about one out every 10 that you jump. It's a low percentage game, but we kind of dialed it in. They were using live pinfish and just drifting those into the schools, and they were using too small a circle hook. I think they were using like a 6-aught. I'm much more comfortable with like a 10-aught size.
Yeah.
You know, the Mustad Demon circle hook's one I've been using. Most of the time, this time of year, you're going to find them in the surf. They're around. They're cruising up and down. They may be right in the surf. They may be 5 miles off. It's a guessing game with tarpon.
What are you looking for, though? I know you've said this in the past, but we got listeners coming in and out. What are you looking for other than, obviously, your electronics?
I'm mostly scanning the surface and seeing the fish, seeing the actual fish doing their thing. You got to read the fish when they're moving. You see rolling tarpon. That's what everybody talks about. And you get these rolling tarpon that are on the move, and they're typically, I'll run next to them when they're doing that. And if I'm going about 5-6 knots, I don't even bother with that school. The mm-hmm. school that I want is the school that's going really slow and coming up and down a lot and not like skimming the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones I'm really looking for. You can find the deeper fish at times using your electronics. Most of the time what's happened, though, is I've seen them on the surface, and then I get in the area and start doing the side scan, really start looking for them that way. You can watch the bait balls, and if the bait's getting balled up a little bit, you know there's predators around. Could be sharks, could be kingfish, could be jacks, but hopefully it's tarpon. But most of my tarpon fishing is seeing them, you mm-hmm. know, getting in position. You got them rolling, they're moving down the beach. And you want to get ahead of them, get in front of them, get set up, get on the trolling motor, line yourself up for a good shot as they come by. Typically, I'm throwing the, you know, we do it almost always with lures and flies.
Mm-hmm.
But fly fishing, it's extremely critical to get really close and get right on their line so that you can get a decent cast to them. When we're throwing the bait busters, you got a little more margin for error because you got a little longer cast
mm-hmm.
and I can stay off of them a little bit. The DOA bait buster in the deep model and the, you'd think the shallow, they have shallow, deep and trolling. And you would think that the shallow one would be the one to throw, but I do much better throwing the deep or even the trolling model. You get a lot more distance out of it and it gets down a little bit quicker. The tarpon don't seem to want to come up as much to eat it. So it gets down on their level pretty quick. If you got real deep fish, there's the little terror eyes. And people talk about different colors and different things. The clear with a holographic in it has been money for me over the last 2 or 3 years. Every now and then I'll go with a dark color, just something different. If I'm not having any luck with that clear, something like a dark purple. Red, you know, red and white, red with a white tail, something like that. But for the most part, that holographic silver tends to work really well for them.
Now, our listeners want to go to Fishing Tackle Unlimited, our presenting sponsor. They're like, I'm in. Haven't had that luck they wanted in the bays. They're going to try to get out.
like you said, from beachfront to about 5 miles out and see if they can see some tarpon. What are they throwing reel and rod wise?
I'm throwing the G Loomis, and it's I've got spinning rods set up for my customers, and we're throwing the 844s and 843s in Pro Blue. And then they've got the new series, and I'm going drawing a total blank on the new series.
We'll get it. You can put it on
the actions and the length on Loomis rods. When I say 844, it's 84 inches long and it's a 4-power. It's 84 inches long and it's a 3-power. If I'm throwing lures, I might go more towards the 3. If I'm throwing really heavy stuff, go to the 4. Or if we're jigging, doing a little more jigging, you got a little more backbone with that 4. But I've got both. I've got both set up. And the 3 just tends to be a little easier to cast. The 4 is a little better to fight the big fish.
Mm-hmm.
If you're catching the fish at the jetties, our jetty fish tend to be more the 3 to 4 footers, and the much smaller fish, 50, 60, 70 pounds. And the 3 is more than enough for those. Heck, a regular bait caster.
Yeah.
Whatever you'd use for redfish,
mm-hmm,
is plenty for those little jetty fish. Now you get on the beachfront, you got those 70 pounders, but you also have 100 pounders, 150 pounders, and on up 200 pounders. So having that little stronger rod, that 4-power, kind of pays off a little bit when you hook into one of those.
This question I meant to get to you last time and I didn't, so I want to get to it now. Reading bait at the jetties, quote, "I was told that seeing a lot of ribbon fish," Caleb, I'm going to start with you, so get your jetty knowledge going. "I was told that seeing a lot of ribbon fish at the jetties is a sure sign Spanish mackerel are feeding. Is that true? And do different baits mean anything when it comes to fish, to which fish you're going to find at the jetties?" Go, Caleb.
Captain Caleb has left the chat.
Go, Caleb.
Ribbon fish. Yeah, that could be Spanish max. That could dang sure be bull reds too. Anytime I'm around jetties, deep water, in the bay, outside the jetties, I see ribbon fish jumping, I'm probably going to look and see if there's bull reds there. Little shrimp popping along the rocks, man, that could be anything. Trout, stuff like that. Anytime I get bait popping along the rocks, I get pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
And then there's the things that come along. Usually when there's ribbon fish popping, you'll find a frigate or something like that messing around. You see a frigate go down, hit the water, and come back out with a ribbon fish. Get your butt over there ASAP pronto, because it's jacks, it's bulls, it's Spanish, it's max, it's something. Unlike a mullet, ribbon fish doesn't jump out of the water for pleasure.
Yeah.
But yeah, anytime I get bait popping, because again, they're in deep water, and a fish that doesn't typically jump out of the water, if he's starting to jump out of the water, or a crustacean for that matter, there's probably something messing with him, making him want to do that.
Caleb, Scott, you spend a lot of time on the jetties. Do particular baits mean anything fish-wise, or maybe have a tendency to mean anything fish-wise?
Generally, when I see the Spanish mackerel, they're eating little bitty stuff, and it's clouds of bait fish, like inch long stuff, little bitty, and it's just a cloud of bait moving around. If you see a lot of little splish splash and all that, that's typically what that is. The terns will be working on it. You'll see just a lot of scattered splashes. That's more Spanish mackerel. I don't see them chasing the ribbon fish all that much. When the ribbon fish come up, it's jacks, tarpon, kingfish, bull reds. It's going to be bigger fish. I mean, mm-hmm. The ribbon fish at the jetties, they may be 2 or 3 feet long. Heck, that's longer than most of the Spanish mackerel that are out there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, ribbon fish is a definite go. I mean, mm-hmm. there's no doubt. And we get it on the regular here. It's pretty much an every morning thing that the bulls and the jacks go after the ribbon fish just inside our jetties. It's well known down here. And just look for the boats. There'll be 10, 15 boats all around them waiting on them to come up. The real secret to catching a bunch of fish around there is electronics. Because the ones that come up to the top, everybody can see those. And everybody runs straight to them. Well, they put them down as soon as they get on them.
Yeah.
Everybody catches one or two, they go down. If you got good electronics, then you can kind of ease around the outside and figure out where that school went. All they're doing is waiting to push up some more bait and mm-hmm. do it again. But if you can find them, drop a jig down to them, it's money.
Good stuff, man. All right. Well, don't forget, in about 15 minutes, we're going to visit with Captain Aaron Cisneros when we get to geared up. But the next, let's talk about making the most of the time we do get to fish with the heat already suffocating. Next, here on Sports Radio 610. Welcome back to the Bite Me Fishing Show.
Hot, man, it's beyond hot. I know we are always saying it's hot in Texas, but good gravy. We talked about the water temps. How about just our air temps, which are ridiculous?
The barometer's below 30. I like it. Mm-hmm. Hey, we've got low winds the whole time. And then a little bit of rain Friday morning. So maybe that barometer dip on Thursday has a little bit to do with some weather. Who knows? But it looks like we've got some cloud cover, some partly cloudy skies. It'd be another one of those early morning, throw in the top waters as the day goes on, getting a little bit deeper. The wind kind of says I can sight cast, but the water temps and everything, it kind of makes me think that they're not going to be in that shallow water real long. So I'd probably be either drifting or wading some deeper water, throwing a plastic kind of low and hopping it around. Man, if I had to guess right now, I'd probably be throwing like a little rat tail, something that's maybe like 4 or 5 inches long. And, you know, getting that morning bite about 10 o'clock, I'm going to go to the house, take a nap, watch some DirecTV, and then be back out for the evening bite late in the day.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to mention, Scott. If you're averse to getting up early and you think, you know, 5 o'clock is early, it is, but get up at 3:30 or 4, right? I mean, this is I gave the example earlier. I mean, it was early, and that was very short window.
Yeah, and if you're just going to go out and go fishing and wade and, you know, blind cast, yeah, get there as the sun's coming up or a little before that and try to smell the slicks if you can't see them. That's probably your best window for a decent bite. You're going to struggle as the day goes on, the way it's been for me. That and something I didn't mention a while ago, mm-hmm. We have had some super, super low tides. I mean, like crazy low tides. It's that time of year for it. We got a full moon right now, and the southwest wind, west wind's not helping. And I'm sitting here looking at a weather forecast, and I'm seeing these, you know, less than 10 mile an hour Thursday and Friday. I'm mad at the weatherman right now because he's been lying to me. Because every day he says southeast, and every day I go out there southwest or west.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure that I want to listen to him and just kind of plan accordingly. That I'm going to be pulling into the wind so I can have the sun in my back. By the weekend, it's looking like it's going to pick up just a little bit more, a little above 10, you know, 10 to 15. So that probably means 15 to 20. Do a little drift fishing out deeper. If I had the big boat, I'd be on the beachfront Thursday and Friday and hope that the weatherman was right.
Yeah.
Maybe go work the jetties and catch that incoming tide. Tide's coming in all morning. So maybe it's pulling a little bit cooler water along the jetties. I might have a little better luck out there. But as far as flats fishing goes, it's
rough.
Daylight till about 9:30, yeah. 10 at the latest. I say that the great school that we had the other day was like 11 o'clock. It was beating down, hot, nasty. Don't know what the hell those fish were thinking, but It's that time of year where you want to go early,
yeah,
and get it done early and get back in early.
I thought of you, Caleb. I think Thursday, that day that Scott was talking about, where it was supposed to be southeast and it was west, and so I was just going everywhere. I get as far away from the dock as possible. I mean, I'm way over on the west end, and I start my motor and I turn around and it's not peeing. And we were just talking about the telltale and the peeing and how to fix it. And I'm like, oh no, that's never a brand new boat. You know, I've had it less than a year. So I did the little, I keep a wire in there, did the little thing on the pee hole and all that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be Caleb out here. I'm going to have to get, I have to tell one of those stories. But anyway, turns out I get back, the hose had popped off of the spout on the telltale hole. So I was still, all the water was circulating inside my motor.
So, I went four days and four days without peeing.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
and no problems.
I was watching the water temps. The water temps stayed fine. It's some way those Mercury R motors, like they'll still do it or something, but it is nerve wracking.
Oh, and every time
I spent hours with the boat on the trailer and doing the wire thing and looking for clean out filters. And yeah, it been there, done that, bud.
Mine was the easiest fix. And I actually called JT from the boatyard. And he told me, well, did you try this? Try this? I said, yes, yes. Is the hose connected? No. No, it's not. Let me get a little tie wrap, and I think we're back in business. So
sometimes it's really simple.
I tell you, being on the water can make you feel like the dumbest guy on the planet. Like, I tried everything. I was thinking I'd go backwash the hoses and all this other stuff. The little hose on the spout just popped off, I guess, disconnected. So I just tie wrapped it. Boom, we're 100%. But shout out to JT in the Boatyard. Get your OG sauce there. He said they're going to be ordering some more. I've got some there already. You can get OG sauce there. Certainly Mike at Anglers Anonymous has it and all your fishing needs and all that.
So get there and pick some up. All right, let's talk Baffin Bay. Let's talk South Padre. Let's talk the Lower Laguna Madre, some of the unique things about that whole area. And let's do it with one of the best in the business, Captain Aaron Cisneros. That's next right here on Sports Radio 610. All right, it's time. It's time for Geared Up, of course, brought to us every week by Anglers Anonymous. And we're really going to set you up for that trip down south. Captain Aaron Cisneros, I almost said Ernest. How often do you get that, by the way?
To this day, I wouldn't feel like you're the only one.
It's every other trip. I was like, eh.
But exactly. With Captain Aaron Cisneros here on the Bite Me Fishing Show on Sports Radio 610. Been looking forward to this. It's a compadre. We don't get a lot of those on the show with Captain Dean, his accent, and Captain Scott and Captain Caleb. So a little personal joy there when we get to do that. But you are listening to the Bite Me Fishing Show, and we're going to go down south. And we're doing that for a very particular reason, because here we are in, I guess it's not even officially summer yet, but even though it feels like it, in the summertime, things change down south. There's also some perceptions. It's almost mythical, as if, hey, I'm going to go down there, whether it's, South Padre or Mansfield or even down to Baffin. Like, and there's an allure of like, ooh, boy, I can't wait for my 30-inch trout. And exactly. The demand is incredible. But first of all, Aaron, thanks for joining us, and then we're going to get into all that.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, and I know you stay busy, but I got a bunch of stuff I want to get to. But the first thing I want to do is thank you, because we have the Bite Me Feeding Frenzy every year, raise a lot of money. Last year was $73,000 altogether, 50 wow. The year before that, and you're going to be donating a trip. And by the way, you may not know this, you're donating a trip to a package that includes housing, weekend place, and a bird hunt. Cool. That's it's going to be a very, very good package. So thank you for that. Let's get into my blunder there at the top of this segment, calling you Ernest Cisneros. But there's something good about that. I mean, you grew up in this business. That a lot of people get into this business. What was that like growing up in the business, so to speak?
Yeah, so I'm second generation fishing guide. My father, Ernest Cisneros, who's been doing it for 30 plus years, had me fishing at a young age, as far as I can remember. But really, really key thing about fishing with my dad, as I grew up throwing straight artificial and right to weight fishing at such a young age. So growing up in that stage, being straight at artificial and weight fishing on the flats, I got to learn a lot from the seafloor to presentation of a lure and the science behind everything, just because takes a lot of technique and science that goes behind being a professional artificial fisherman and learning from a professional himself. Big props to my dad. I'm so glad I got to learn it, not the right way, but the way that I was taught. Mm-hmm. And that's what I can say. That's all I really know. Just growing up doing that at such a young age. And like I said, at a young age, I'd say he had me wade fishing by myself. And this is like dropping me off on a spool island and him going a couple islands over with a walkie talkie. Cause this is before, cell phones. So he would drop me off, and this is like 7, 8 years old. I already Holy had my smokes. Own wading belt. I had pliers. And by 13, I was able to walk towards the boat, turn on the boat, and then go pick him up a couple hundred yards over, because we didn't have power poles back in those days. But so I started young. I'd say 13 years old, I can still remember some of our trips wade fishing from Baffin with my dad's friends to going out with McBride and Trisha down in Port Mansfield at such a young age.
All right. I'm sure mom had something to say about putting my 7-year-old out on a wade by himself. I'm sure mom had something to say about that.
You know what? My mom enjoyed being by herself, shopping, gardening, and not having a kid on nagging. Hey, I want to go fishing. Where's dad? I want to be with dad. That kind of deal. But it all worked out. My mom hung out with my sister and I hung out with my dad.
That's awesome. Who cares about stingrays and stuff like that? He'll be all right. Rub some dirt on it.
People ask me, speaking about stingrays, I got hit by a stingray at a young age. And
really?
To this day, I've been hit 3 times. So like I tell people, it's like a carpenter. He's going to hit his thumb once or twice throughout the year. And that's just how I kind of see it. It's going to happen. It's part of the job.
Oh my gosh. And I bet you freaked out though the first time.
Oh, the first time I cried. I'll never forget. My dad dropped me off by myself and I was wade fishing for flounder on the intercoastal. And I'll never forget. I hit a hole. I was sliding my feet, but I hit an indention. And sure enough, that's where that stingray was. And that was my first hit. And I can still feel it to this day.
Oh, I'm sure you can. Battle scars.
Exactly.
All right, so a lot to cover here, and I'm glad I got you on. Let's start with the other thing that I mentioned early on, you know, the allure, the mythology of going down south. Myself included, if you listen to the podcast, and I know you do, you know, I've mm-hmm. said, I like to learn, I've liked, and I'm settled down in Aransas Pass, but to spend 4 or 5 years one place, I did that in Sabine, and then Trinity Bay, and then, probably 20 years in Matagorda. And then I'm just heading further south every time, different water, different ways to fish. Good way to learn, you know, mm-hmm. as you grow and all that. You grew up in the Mecca, you know, of what a lot of people think. What's different? I mean, because it is, I fished there several times. It's just different.
Yes. So being in this profession, And being able to fish with all kinds of people and all kinds, I mean, people from fish Galveston, Texas City Dyke, Louisiana, and anything but South Texas. And South Texas, I'm saying Baffin and Lower Laguna.
Yeah. Hey, there goes a deer.
and the Lower Laguna. What I could say is fishing the grass. If you know how to fish grass, and that's the big thing down here is a lot of people are so used to fishing the bottom, whether it be mud, shell, but they don't have as much grass as we do. So with that to say is I get a lot of guys that are fighting the grass. Mm-hmm. So if you can learn how to keep your lure out of the grass and keep yourself fishing and not fighting it, mm-hmm. you allow yourself to get in a lot more water with the fishing it correctly, mm-hmm. per se. And that's a big thing. A lot of people say, man, I love it down here. The water's so clear. Everything looks good. Well, everything does look good. That's kind of like me going to a lake for bass fishing. Everything looks fishy to me. And same thing down here. Everything's so clear. Everything looks good. But fish hang out in certain areas and they love grass. And if you can really learn how to fish those grassy areas, it really puts you ahead of everybody else that's tends to fish the bottom. And a lot of my fishing per se and a lot of my quality fish are coming in 1 foot to 2.5 foot of water kind of deal, 3 foot mm-hmm. max. And a lot of it's heavy grass, areas that you typically wouldn't think, because everybody's looking for potholes and stuff like that. But a lot of these times these fish to get away from traffic are getting in these thick areas with grass.
And so that's the approach. That's top waters. That's weedless. What else would be the approach for you?
Yeah. So top waters, small top waters, because again, you're in shallow water and it's probably going to be clear or semi-clear. Mm-hmm. So these big loud she-dogs and stuff like that work great when it's springtime, when it's 30 mile an hour winds and these fish are kind of, they're not so keyed on motion and clarity of water. You can kind of get away with it. But on these normal days where it's 10 to 15 mile an hour winds and you got clarity, small, clear top waters work great. Something with not a high pitch works even better. And certain days, don't get me wrong, there's days that where it all works. But weedless is probably the game changer for me and for my clients. It just allows us to fish areas that I normally, I could remember, I always had a hard time fishing it. And yeah, you had to be somebody that knew how to fish grass. Now mm-hmm. I can get a novice in there with the weedless setup and him fish it just like myself.
Yeah. And that leads to kind of the season thing that I wanted to talk to you about. Temperatures coming up. I know they've been up there for a while, down there, I should say. What changes, you know, whether it's not necessarily what you're targeting, because I know you're kind of targeting the same thing, but approach as you get into the summer months here?
Yeah, so water's temperatures heating up quicker than you would expect it. Now as we don't have just the way things are going on now. And I've noticed throughout the years, and I'm going per a guide's point of view, where I want to put my clients on fish, and you want to get on a consistent bite, whether that be from redfish or trout, versus just going after one big fish. You know what I'm saying? I'm going after numbers. And what I found is these fish are coming off the flats 30 minutes before sunup, and by the time the sun's up, they're off in the intercoastal, or they're in your guts, or they're on spoil islands that are near the closer to the intercoastal than any other island. So I've learned the ditch has been productive most summers, and starting now already for us. And a lot of people say, oh, well, we fish the intercoastal and we catch, I mean, small trout and whatever. Man, we catch quality fish under those dinks by just switching up our weight of our jig head and going from something you would throw like a quarter ounce, and people say, well, I throw a quarter ounce and I don't see much of a difference. Well,
they're keeping it on top.
Yeah. They're keeping it on top because they're so used to throwing with the wind and just kind of going in motion. But think about it. If you throw downwind, there's a lot of resistance on your line as you're working it. So it's keeping that bait up high in the water column. And those fish are down deep. It's warm and you got boat traffic. They don't want to be on top. Okay. Yeah. They want to be comfortable. They don't want to have to think about anything. So they're down deep. And down deep would be anywhere from 5 to 10 foot of water. And we'll see them on the scanners. And how do you get into those fish? Well, throwing head current, throwing upwind, up current, allowing your slack to kind of drift into where you're at, and you're basically just working your slack.
That's very Florida-like. That's what they do a lot in Florida. Just letting it drift in.
Yes, exactly. I fished Florida a couple of times, and that's something I picked up snook fishing in Florida in big currents.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting. Here's the other thing about fishing down there, and we're hopefully our listeners can get with you and book a trip. We'll get that information later. But even if they don't, just to go down there, the information I want to share with them. We are conditioned, especially in Matagorda when I was fishing there, especially in Sabine when I was there. There was some deeper water. Find the shell reef. Find the big structure, and fish the edges. That's not necessarily the case down south, is it? I remember the first time I went to Aransas Pass, I just started, you know, spitballing, trying to figure things out, learn the base system, all that. And I was going to all these edges of grass flats and all these edges of islands and stuff. And Captain Dean was like, you don't have to do that here. It's not the same. So explain kind of the approach with structure and such down there.
Yeah, so we don't have a lot of structure, and that per se is we got sandbars and grass flats, guts, of course, and spool islands, and that would pretty much be our structure. Our average depth down here is about 1.5 feet. So what do I look for when I want to fish structure? I'm looking for grass lines in deeper water that are holding... It just depends on the time of the year. So summertime, I'm looking for anything near 3 to 5 foot of water, but I'm myself and about 2 to 3 foot of water. But I'm looking for areas with that have a quick drop off where these fish can find relief, can find cool water, can find safety in a quick manner versus being way out east and big open 1.5 foot sand flats where it would take so much traveling for that fish to get into cooler water or to get away from any traffic. So a lot of my areas are near deep water. And like I said, that just finds these fish find refuge there. They can get away from fishermen or temperature itself. So a lot of my structure is depending on the time of the year. If we get rain, I'm fishing near our freshwater sloughs, and that pushes a lot of bait out into those open flats areas. Summertime, I'm sandbars, I'm spool islands, I'm intercoastal waterway. And then wintertime, here comes the temperatures cooling down, but yet you get those clear, crisp days. So you kind of got to think like a fish. And man, it was so cold at night, but here comes the sun. Well, what do you want to do? Do you want to stay in the shade or do you want to get in that sun? Yeah. And it comes to play a lot like that. Common sense comes into play as well with fishing.
All right, coming up, let's talk wade fishing, snook, and trophy trout with Captain Aaron Cisneros next here on Sports Radio 610. Welcome back with Captain Aaron Cisneros here on Geared Up, presented by the great, great people at Anglers Anonymous, which, of course, all the gear and tactics we talk about here all the time, they'll set you up exactly how you'd like at Anglers Anonymous. You wondering about that particular thing? They have it. All right, Aaron. What percentage of, if you're really trying to fish, whether it's numbers or big trout, is wading?
Wade fishing for big trout, I'd say 90% of it is all 90%? Wade fishing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, and only because this is where down south comes into play. Our flats are very shallow, and it's vast majority of flats. So that's where everybody enjoys coming down here, because you can wade fish 10 guys in one spot. I mean, it's just big open flats. So wade fishing is key. It's like you're able to bow hunt these fish. You're not to say that you're out there with a bow, but you can get quiet, you can get up on them nice and personal, and find better quality fish like that, per se, for trout. Now, don't get me wrong, here comes February, we have a cold front that's just coming in, and it's windier than ever. Drifting does come in well, but a lot of these times these fish are schooled up, and you can find 50 trout in a 200 yard radius. So it's nice to get 3 to 5 guys off and really dissect that flat, just because you're able to down here with our shallow water.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now we're into the summer. How much snook targeting? How much does the snook come into play this time of year?
Yeah, so snook fishing in the summer is awesome. This is when they're starting to spawn. It would be June, July is really that peak season. But they do start coming in. Once those cold fronts kind of fade away and that warmer trend starts to come up, they're gone from the ship channel and they're up in the flats. So we're already on today's trip, we caught 5 of them. Now, really? we weren't targeting them. We were fishing for redfish and trout in our redfish and trout spots. I normally don't catch snook there, but we caught them. And it's a big thing right now. I'd say your bigger snook are caught in the summertime as they're spawning, just like a trout, they're bigger right now.
Yeah.
And I do tell people it's easier to catch a 30-inch snook than it is a 30-inch trout, because they don't play around like a trout would. And per se, he's not going to hit your top water 2 to 3 times. It's going to hit that one big smack and it's on, versus that big trout chasing it all the way up to the boat.
Popping it in the air and everything else. But you know what's funny about that is snook tend to get into mangroves, in Florida and such, and even, you know, other places, maybe jetties. Have they adapted down there a little more, or are they still trying? You got to target those kinds of things.
Yeah, so I fished Florida a couple times for snook, and the difference between Florida and Texas snook is, and the snook fishing per se, is Florida, their mangroves, they got deep water. They got 3 foot, 4 foot of water to fish under their mangroves. And the difference between us is we only got about 1 foot to maybe 1.5 feet of depth of water to fish. So what that to say is they do hang out under the mangroves if the water's up. If the water's low, they're off of it. And just like any other fish, they're going to come off of it. I will say the structure down here is oysters. If you can find a really good shoreline with oysters on it, and that protects them from boat traffic and fishermen also, is they know nobody's going to get on top of them. It's a hard spot to get to them. If you can find that with current, the key thing is current with these fish. I know any other fish, it's going to be incoming or outgoing and you can get a bite, but the snook, for some reason, it has to have some kind of current. If there's no current at all, I mean, it's almost just looking at an aquarium. You'll see them, but they're not going to bite. And it's very frustrating. That's what makes them a fish of 1,000 casts, because you have to be as hard-headed as they are, because you have to wait for that incoming or that strong outgoing tide. And that's why I tell a lot of people, it takes a full day to really get and to key on a good snook bite, because you need that good fluctuation of an incoming and outgoing tide. And if you can get both in one day, that's the best way to find them.
I'm curious, just give us an inkling of what the health of the fishery is down there compared to, you've been fishing there a long time, like we said earlier, you know, since you're 7 years old. How has the health of the fishery developed and where is it right now?
Yeah, overall, to say that the freeze that we had during the COVID time, sure, it was rough on the trout. But to say that it's hurting, I would say not. Our trout fishery is phenomenal. To get into one spot and to catch 20 trout a person, whether it be dinks and keeper fish in between, is still happening. And you see that in numerous spots, not in just one spot. You can get on a couple spots and just get on a solid trout bite. The flounder fishing is on down south has always been in and out. It's either hot or not. That's just how it is down here. Mm-hmm. And the redfish, I can say the redfish are just, they're hardy fish. It's overall, it's been good. Now, difference from what I was a kid to now is you just don't really see them schooling up in the spots that they normally would in big herds. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. You may see a school of reds in there. And that same pothole, you would see them as a kid and every other year they get in there, but they just don't do it as often as they normally would. And I can say that go ahead.
No, I was saying, you don't have the big, big groups of redfish necessarily.
Exactly. When I was a kid, I can remember you're getting there on the flats early morning. It's slick calm. You could get up there in the saucer or behind the shacks early in the morning, and you're going to see the schools of reds in August, September. And it was a no-brainer. I mean, you're going to see them. You just don't really see that as often. Now, you do see that at the jetty still. You could still go to the jetties and still get on them like that or flats near the jetty. So they still school up. They just don't seem to do it in the areas like they normally would back in the days. That's the only thing I could see on the redfish. But
go ahead.
Yeah, touching on the trout. If not the same, if not better, just because of the way everything's going. Mm-hmm. On a good winter day, cruising the flats, you see numbers of big trout, and that goes to tell you that's what you're seeing. Imagine what you're not seeing.
Exactly.
So, I know for a fact this population of fish is healthy down here.
And the limits are helping.
Oh, the limits and the fishermen themselves are healthy. People are starting to understand what we have down here. It's something that you normally don't get into unless you go to Florida. Like I tell people, it's a mimic of Florida. We have so much grass, so much clear water. It's something different. It's something to take care of down here.
Yeah. Okay. So the other thing before I let you go, I'm going a little long here. I apologize, but I want to get to this before we go. Interesting thing about going down south. Again, you know, South Padre, Mansfield, and further south than that even, is people, that is a destination fishing trip. Like up here, and I know you have your regular clients that are kind of in the area or whatever, but it's a trip, you know, for a lot of people in Texas. It's a trip to get down there. So yes. A destination fishing trip, I'm guessing that the pressure, I could never do what you're doing, because the pressure on this guy has been waiting for 3 months, booked me 3 months ago, 6 months ago, whatever, to come down here from Dallas, from even San Antonio. You know, that's still a hike, you know, down there, Houston or wherever out of state. The pressure on you must be incredible. How do you deal with that, man? Because these are like maybe two or three a year, a lot of your clients.
Yes. I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed that my clients make it easy on me. A lot of times, don't get me wrong, I'll get a client here and there that's kind of hard on me. But when it comes to lure fishing and these guys getting on the boats, understanding that this is straight lure fishing, they in themselves understand the bite. If they can put in the effort, they're going to catch something. And I always tell people when they get on my boat, if I'm catching fish and you're not, you're doing something wrong. so I always tell people, look at my rod. I'm always right there next to them to really get on some fish. But I'd say our population of our fish population is so healthy, it doesn't take much to really find a bite. And especially being out here at such a young age, you know, they're somewhere. You just have to find them.
Yeah. This has been really great. We're going to hit you up again, and you made the mistake of telling me that you do full-time duck and dove hunting as well. So, you know, you're really going to not like me eventually because I'm going to bug you again, maybe for our hunting season never ends segment. But let's get that contact information out there. Hell, I'm excited, and I go fishing every week about wanting to go down there. How can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, sure. So I do have a Facebook, and you can search my name under Captain Aaron Cisneros. And the best way to reach me is under my cell phone. That's going to be 956-639-1941. And go ahead and just give me a shout, and I can definitely fit you in and find a perfect month for you to come down and enjoy our fishing.
That is awesome. And if you are not doing anything, I got your dinner and a couple of beers at least at the Feeding Frenzy on August 29th. Great donation. Really nice of you to do that, because it's going to be a big time draw for our listeners and for the charities with which we work. So appreciate that. August 29th, it's a Saturday. You're probably booked, but there's the invitation for you, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, all right. Fun day. And of course, if you prefer to fish Port O'Connor, Matagorda, Aransas Pass, remember to book Captain Scott, Captain Caleb, and Captain Dean. Just hit them up via our Facebook group page or their social media, and you're good to go. Let's do this again tomorrow, 4 a.m. Until then, you guys have a great rest of the weekend. Be safe. Catch them up. We'll talk to you next time.